syllables trickled out of his lifeless mouth. And then, as if consenting to give up his ghost, the Harvard professor slowly began sinking to the bottom of the tank, where he disappeared into the shadows.
He's gone.
Catherine felt numb. The tattooed man reached down, and with pitiless finality, he slid the small viewing window closed, sealing Langdon's corpse inside. Then he smiled at her.
Shall we?
Before Catherine could respond, he hoisted her grief-stricken body onto his shoulder, turned out the light, and carried her out of the room. With a few powerful strides, he transported her to the end of the hall, into a large space that seemed to be bathed in a reddish-purple light. The room smelled like incense. He carried her to a square table in the center of the room and dropped her hard on her back, knocking the wind out of her. The surface felt rough and cold.
Is this stone?
Catherine had hardly gotten her bearings before the man had removed the wire from her wrists and ankles. Instinctively, she attempted to fight him off, but her cramped arms and legs barely responded. He now began strapping her to the table with heavy leather bands, cinching one strap across her knees and then buckling a second across her hips, pinning her arms at her sides. Then he placed a final strap across her sternum, just above her breasts. It had all taken only moments, and Catherine was again immobilized. Her wrists and ankles throbbed now as the circulation returned to her limbs.
Open your mouth, the man whispered, licking his own tattooed lips.
Catherine clenched her teeth in revulsion. The man again reached out with his index finger and ran it slowly around her lips, making her skin crawl. She clenched her teeth tighter. The tattooed man chuckled, and using his other hand, found a pressure point on her neck and squeezed. Catherine's jaw instantly dropped open. She could feel his finger entering her mouth and running along her tongue. She gagged and tried to bite it, but the finger was already gone. Still grinning, he raised his moist fingertip before her eyes. Then he closed his eyes and once again rubbed her saliva into the bare circle of flesh on his head. The man sighed and slowly opened his eyes. Then, with an eerie calm, he turned and left the room. In the sudden silence, Catherine could feel her heart pounding. Directly over her, an unusual series of lights seemed to be modulating from purple-red to a deep crimson, illuminating the room's low ceiling. When she saw the ceiling, all she could do was stare. Every inch was covered with drawings. The mind-boggling collage above her appeared to depict the celestial sky. Stars, planets, and constellations mingled with astrological symbols, charts, and formulas. There were arrows predicting elliptical orbits, geometric symbols indicating angles of ascension, and zodiacal creatures peering down at her. It looked like a mad scientist had gotten loose in the Sistine Chapel. Turning her head, Catherine looked away, but the wall to her left was no better. A series of candles on medieval floor stands shed a flickering glow on a wall that was completely hidden beneath pages of text, photos, and drawings. Some of the pages looked like papyrus or vellum torn from ancient books. Others were obviously from newer texts. Mixed in were photographs, drawings, maps, and schematics. All of them appeared to have been glued to the wall with meticulous care. A spider web of strings had been thumbtacked across them, interconnecting them in limitless, chaotic possibilities. Catherine again looked away, turning her head in the other direction. Unfortunately, this provided the most terrifying view of all. Adjacent to the stone slab on which she was strapped, there stood a small side counter that instantly reminded her of an instrument table from a hospital operating room. On the counter was arranged a series of objects, among them a syringe, a vial of dark liquid, and a large knife with a bone handle and a blade hewn of iron burnished to an unusually high shine.
My God, what is he planning to do to me?
Chapter 105. When CIA Systems Security Specialist Rick Parrish finally loped into Nola Kay's office, he was carrying a single sheet of paper.
What took you so long? Nola demanded.
I told you to come down immediately. Sorry, he said,
pushing up his bottle-bottom glasses on his long nose. I was just trying to gather more information for you, but just show me what you've got.
Parrish handed her the printout. It's a redaction, but you get the gist.
Nola scanned the page in amazement.
I'm still trying to figure out how a hacker got access, Parrish said. But it looks like a Delegator spider hijacked one of our search—
Forget that, Nola blurted, glancing up from the page. What the hell is the CIA doing with a classified file about pyramids, ancient portals, and engraved symbolons?
That's what took me so long. I was trying to see what document was being targeted, so I traced the file path.
Parrish paused, clearing his throat.
This document turns out to be on a partition personally assigned to the CIA director himself.
Nola wheeled, staring in disbelief. Sato's boss has a file about the Masonic Pyramid?
She knew that the current director, along with many other top CIA executives, was a high-ranking Mason, but Nola could not imagine any of them keeping Masonic secrets on a CIA computer.
Then again, considering what she had witnessed in the last 24 hours, anything was possible.
Agent Simpkins was lying on his stomach, ensconced in the bushes of Franklin Square. His eyes were trained on the columned entry of the Almas Temple.
Nothing.
No lights had come on inside, and no one had approached the door. He turned his head and checked on Bellamy. The man was pacing alone in the middle of the park, looking cold, really cold. Simpkins could see him shaking and shivering. His phone vibrated. It was Sato.
How overdue is our target? She demanded.
Simpkins checked his chronograph.
Target said 20 minutes. It's been almost 40. Something's wrong.
He's not coming, Sato said. It's over.
Simpkins knew she was right.
Any word from Hartman?
No. He never checked in from Kalorama Heights. I can't reach him.
Simpkins stiffened. If this was true, then something was definitely wrong.
I just called field support, Sato said, and they can't find him either.
Holy shit. Do they have a GPS location on the Escalade?
Yeah, a residential address in Kalorama Heights, Sato said. Gather your men. We're pulling out.
Sato clicked off her phone and gazed out at the majestic skyline of her nation's capital. An icy wind whipped through her light jacket, and she wrapped her arms around herself to stay warm. Director Inoue Sato was not a woman who often felt